guys, we know you like to listen to our podcasts and reviews. We know generally that you like to listen to stuff. How about listening to stuff on Audible?
Well, Audible, isn't that what we do?
Well, I mean, we do Audible reviews, but I'm talking about Audible.com. I mean, you're talking about one of the internet's best resources for audio programs from leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, magazine and newspaper publishers, and even business information providers.
Like over 150,000 audio programs, adding up to over 1,500,000 hours of audio programming. I don't think we're quite there yet.
No.
Yeah, but
we'll get there.
But, you know, obviously you guys like audio. You're looking for new audio stuff to check out. Audible.com has more than enough of what you're looking for.
And we're proud to call them a sponsor. And as a special gift to you, we're offering you, through Audible, a free audiobook. All you have to do is click on the link on the bottom of this page, or you can go to audibletrial.com/oneofus. And by doing so, not only do you get a free audiobook, but you're helping out the site as well.
And we know you want to do that.
Of course you want to do that.
Because we're standing outside your window watching you right now, wanting to do that.
Absolutely. So stop, look, and most importantly, listen to audible.com.
Back in Kevin's. Oh, you know what? I just saw that on the roof. Somebody's been working on the roof of your garage, and I saw that like plaster had been put up. I was like, oh, he fixed a hole in the roof.
No, that's been there.
But you didn't. Where
the hole's chair, our table is in a little bit different
that's
spot.
That's why it looked different. Yeah, it looked up where the hole would normally be. So we're back in Kevin's garage. What is Mark doing tonight?
Mark has a little bit more of his day job that he had to do tonight. So I'll be producing this episode. So send those letters to
viewer mail here.
Care of Kevin's garage.
Exactly.
Austin, Texas, 787 something.
Why is it this produced better at gmail.com?
I keep wanting to talk about this every time. So you guys, Ryan and Kevin, live in pretty far south Austin. I live in like north central. It's a little bit of a drive to come down here, and I listen to NPR. And I always forget, I think it's because it lulls me to sleep, but the show that comes on is this CBC show.
The notoriety. That formerly had Mr. Gian Gomeshi, he of the chivalry.
Yes. Yeah. And so
Kevin, do you not know
what we're talking about.
This was pre Bill Cosby scandal. The Bill Cosby scandal eclipsed the Gian Gomeshi scandal.
Yeah, it knocked it off the front pages.
My,
he was accused of forcing women into rough sex.
Very, very rough, not necessarily consensual sex. Although he said it was, and I think some of the women beg to differ.
A lot of the women beg to differ. Yes, Gian Gomeshi. This show
is funny because if you ever listen to that show, he had like a really soothing voice, you know, like this Charlie Rose kind of thing. Then it turns out he's like this sadist.
But that show has a long, like every single host. It's like basically when you go up for the job of the host of the show Q, you have to have a really weird name, like Gian Gomeshi. There's another.
Are you Irish now?
There's another.
I'm here with my brother.
Chia Padai. Yeah. There's all of the people have like really interesting. Anyway, I'm way up.
NPR in general has a lot of that, but
I'll buy that. So they have this thing that I know now is the most boring thing I have ever heard on radio, and it's called Writer's Almanac, and it's.
What's it about?
It's 5 minutes of Garrison Keillor. That in and of itself should show.
Well, that'll put you to sleep.
But no, it's not just Garrison Keillor. It's Garrison Keillor reading poetry. There's always a poem.
That's the thing that I was hearing when I had to take a minute from, what's it called? Fucking, sorry, I'm blanking. The first rap record we did.
NWA.
I was listening to like hardcore gangster rap.
Technically, the first rap record would have been Beastie Boys. Possibly.
Oh, yeah.
That is true.
Right.
That is true. Yeah. Thank you. But no, I'm listening to, you know, murder and bitches. And my phone stopped and I couldn't find the next song. And so I just put on NPR, and it was Garrison Keillor reading Robert Frost.
That's all, like, all of the jokes about NPR that have ever been made about putting people. I literally think it puts me in a coma, and then I just forget about it because I keep wanting to talk about it.
Not literally a coma.
No, because I think it does, and that's why I forget about it every week.
If you're a medical professional.
I'm driving in my sleep.
He may have been misdiagnosed.
Yes, that's true. So anyway, and also you guys don't have much occasion to drive down I-35 South, do you? Because there's an amazing billboard on 35. There's like a woman in jeans with a Walkman, like in a dancing pose, and it says, "Let's dance." And then it says, "Book your experience with Melody today." And that's all it. And it's like hashtag be yourself.
I know what that is.
What is that?
It's actually hashtag. I think it's it might be yourself, but it might be somebody, which is a website.
Something like that.
So yeah, it's a website where they curate experiences with experts on things. So it actually like it in context, it actually makes sense. But for those who don't know what the hell that hashtag stands for,
me being one,
which is probably gonna be most people.
Yeah,
like certainly initially. Reggie? Yeah, then you know you'd be looking like the what is it, the dog showing a card trick. You know,
yeah.
The Hicksie.
Well, that's certainly how I felt. And she's having a good time on that billboard, though. All right. So anyway, that's my commute. That's what I wanted to talk about. But we should probably get into the show now. So I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
Kevin here.
And Somebody Likes It. We just watched an interesting video.
You just did.
Well, no, I finally got through it, but it doesn't come easily to
I'll
me.
I'll bet that video is getting a spike of viewership right now.
So let's talk about it. So
why do you think that is?
Well,
A surge of interest in Hobbit things.
Oh, and Leonard Nimoy.
Leonard Nimoy has
passed away a few days ago.
You know, I did have a thought that I haven't really seen expressed very many places, and I don't know if this is true. Maybe it's not true. But I'm wondering if William Shatner kept his toupee at half-mast on the day that Leonard Nimoy
use a toupee at half-mast?
Actually, half-off. Like,
just pull it back to where your bald head is more exposed.
Raised like an angry weasel. Like, I don't know.
So
Angry Weasel. Yes.
That's going to be a new band name,
my
too.
My punk band.
Angry. Yeah. Everything about you when you're new, your imaginary bands are always like a punk band.
They are.
So, Ryan, why don't you tell us about what we just watched?
Well, we just watched Leonard Nimoy, I guess at the height of the Star Trek phenomenon in 1968, released an album. And evidently the highlight of said album was The Ballad of Bilbo Baggins. And so it's in a very 1968 fashion. There's a music video with people cavorting about.
And wearing Spock ears.
Colorful garb.
It's impressively awful. Like,
yeah, Kevin loves this song.
Kevin wouldn't even watch the whole
Bilbo
video.
Bilbo Baggins.
Yeah.
Yeah, I highly, highly, highly recommend that anybody.
It's definitely worth a watch.
If you haven't seen it before, please go see it.
I just can't imagine. It's like they put that whole thing together and they're done with it. They go back and they look at it and they're like, oh, this is exactly our vision. This is good.
It was probably somebody's job at some label to push that to radio.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, shop the thing around. I think we got a winner here.
Hey, here's a piece of shit.
If you type in, all you have to do is type in Leonard Nimoy, Bilbo Baggins, and the first thing that comes up is the video of it. But here's a couple other things that came up. One is Westboro Baptist Church missed Leonard Nimoy's funeral because they couldn't find it.
I hate it when that happens. When you're racist,
did they look
in
space?
Church?
Yeah. And the other, so I wanted to talk about something today that we normally talk. That was our little current events, and on the way over here, I heard a song on the radio, and it had what I realized is one of my least favorite things ever utilized device ever utilized in song. And I asked these guys to think. Did you guys think of something?
Well, you didn't characterize it as your least favorite device and song. You characterized it as
something you hate about music. Yeah, okay, maybe it's one of my least favorite, but it's up there, and it's always bad, always. And that is saxophone solos in rock songs.
Oh, sure.
Always
bad. That's irritating.
It's irritating. There's never... All right, right now I've got the sax solo from Never Tear Us Apart, the NXS song.
Sure. Yeah, that's annoying. However, and I don't know if I'd call it a sax solo, but I really like Baker Street by Jerry Rafferty, and that has sax all the way through it, and I think that's a good song.
Are you kidding?
We've had this discussion before.
Oh, yeah.
And the Foo Fighters covered it, and they did a really good version of it, but they did it without sax. But yeah, Shane does not like that song, and
I
do.
I enjoy the Jerry Rafferty.
Yeah,
yeah.
Where are we?
Clearly, you are wrong, and I did, right.
I did though. One time, I was on tour, and Marcus Rice called me, and he was like, "Hey, what's the name of that shitty song with the saxophone in it?" Or no, what's the name of the guy that sings that shitty song with the saxophone in it? And I was like, "Jerry Rafferty." He's like, "Yeah."
That's when you've known somebody a while. Yeah. You're able to just come up with that. But no, man, I love that song.
All right. Well, I'm sorry.
Mine, and the one that I thought of, because you mentioned another song that you heard on the way here, was where the melody vocal melody exactly follows the musical melody. Like, exactly.
Yeah, it's pretty annoying.
It's like, come on, dudes. Like, just fucking put a little time and effort into it.
I think Radiohead utilized that pretty I mean, I know they utilized it pretty successfully in a song, but I can't remember what that was. But it was pretty atonal.
Well, it may be
and it's not the whole song.
The exception that justifies the rule, but the song you were talking about, it was "Dance with Me, I Wanna Be Your Partner," which I think is Chicago, but in any case, I wish it weren't in my head ever.
I think your brain has blocked that knowledge, just like how my brain blocked out the knowledge of Writer's Almanac that we discussed earlier.
Of course. Yeah.
Kevin, did you?
I could go on about all this stuff. I think there are a couple that things that come to mind, and they're present in the same song. And one is the idea of when you sort of Frankenstein talent into a given song in order to make sure that that person is present and not for the betterment of the song. Mm-hmm. And the other is really shitty lyrics that everybody seems to know are shitty lyrics except for the people who have put them in a song and put them on the radio.
I think that happens a lot.
That does happen a lot. But anyway, and the song I'm thinking of is when Eddie Money did that song with
Ronnie Spector.
With Ronnie Spector.
No.
Is the "Take Me Home Tonight"?
It wasn't Ronnie Spector. That was Dusty Springfield. They referenced Ronnie Spector.
Yeah. Well, anyway. The song with the famous line in it, "Hunger, it's a hunger."
Hunger, it's a hunger.
Yeah. I was like, oh, you don't say. But anyway, yeah. But it's like clearly one of these deals. And it feels Frankenstein. And it feels like this weird patchwork bullshit and not in a creative way. Like, stuff like that drives me
bananas.
No,
like, they were recording a song recording an album in the same studio, and like, hey, we got to get you on this tune.
Yeah, sometimes that turns into to a cool thing, like we were talking about last week, and sometimes it turns into this piece of shit.
Iggy Pop and Kate Pearson did
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, they did a duet together that's just not good.
Candy,
I can't let you go.
Yeah, it's
go ahead. Let her go.
Yeah, no, man, let all of us go, please. Iggy, for the love of God.
If that's the song like he wrote to win her back, he's going to need to start over again.
Yeah, it's true.
So, all right, well, this week, Ryan, you picked the record this week.
I did.
And it's Bob Dylan's Blood on the Tracks, so I'm going to turn the floor over to you.
It is indeed Bob Dylan's Blood on the Tracks. I believe it was 1971, 72.
75.
72.
Oh, 75, you're right.
It's 1975, 40 years ago in January, so like not very long ago.
So we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of a record that I am quite ambivalent about.
I knew you were going to say ambivalent.
How so?
Well, I do think we should establish some ground rules. Let's try to keep the bad Bob Dylan impressions to a minimum.
Oh, come on.
But they're going to have to be around some.
It's like it's impossible not to talk about that.
Yeah.
I like that you give us a real square number there. There's going to have to be approximately some.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'd be like, hey, we're covering Hank Williams, but nobody talk about anything rural.
Well, if we're talking about Hank Williams Jr., we have to talk about Jets, apparently.
Sure.
But, yeah. Anyhow, no, to me, you know, and I've given this a couple passes through, and it's a Bob Dylan record, which I've known for pretty much of my adult life that I'm not a giant Bob Dylan fan, but, you know, it's considered in many circles to be his crowning achievement, and I don't get it. Yeah, to me, it's super sing-songy, and like I would play a little game unwittingly with myself where I'd hear him do one lyric, and then it'd go like this, and I'm like, ding, ding. And I'm wondering what's the next rhyme gonna be, because at every single song, it's like, you know, he writes poetry and then he sets it to acoustic music.
Well, and here's the thing, so I wonder if like this isn't because you know we're talking about there are two things that you said here that I think are interesting. One is that you've known this record, or that you've known of Bob Dylan your entire life. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't known probably this record as a singular
entity, no.
Entity until recently. But
all
okay,
I knew was Tangled Up in Blue,
yeah.
Which and I do like that song. And as we've noticed time and again, front loaded on the as the first track on the record.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm trying to I guess the second point here is you've known this your entire life, or at least Bob Dylan your entire life. But I guess here's where I was going. I wonder if this isn't like sort of the Dana Carvey effect, which is to say that you know the like you also talked about the sort of everybody does a Bob Dylan impression, and it's hard not to do. Bob Dylan sounds like a Bob Dylan impression.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of these things where I found myself listening to it too and thinking like, okay, well, I wonder if I can take it seriously because I've got all this time a filter of the Bob Dylan bits in my head.
Well, and just place in our pop culture in general is enormous. But like I was thinking back to it, I'm like, I don't know how many like late night parties I've been to where people throw on music, and like I've heard of this record for so long, nobody ever puts on Bob Dylan.
It's true. Yeah, not late night. And I have a note about this too, exactly what you just said, Kevin, that it's really, really hard for me to separate Bob Dylan from not just the parodies, but the parodies and also the imitators. There's so many people, a lot of people in the
sound. So many people.
Not necessarily.
There's one.
Not the sound. Not the sound of his voice necessarily.
You but get a couple more, by the way. Go ahead.
Everybody gets some.
Yeah.
Not just the sound of his voice, the Bob Dylan voice that everybody knows. Because let's face it, you couldn't write a song that sounds like Bob Dylan and sing it in the Bob Dylan voice and have anybody taking it.
If Bob Dylan didn't exist and you made him up and put him in a movie, people would be like, "What the fuck are you doing?" Like this. That's not a thing that people do in real life, but no, he happened.
Well, and it's also one of these deals too, where it's like, so his, you know, his to quote or to borrow from one of the reviews that I read, you know, his Messiah period, like when he was supposed to be like the next big thing in music, which lasted for a while, you know, it was so long ago that it's like all of that shit is like their life. You know, the Time Life books now or whatever. It's TV land. It's so dated that you can't watch it without the filter of nostalgia. It's difficult to interpret without the passing time between. And, you know, more along the lines of what I was saying a minute ago.
I understand that from our point of view. So I want to say real quick, I want to just jump in and I really want to choose my words carefully here because people that love Dylan love Dylan. And to be frank, like, ambivalent is a great word to describe how I feel about it. It starts out two home runs in a row. I mean, those first two songs on this record are great.
Yep,
I'm with you on that.
A Simple Twist of Fate, like, it's
maybe my favorite song on the record.
That's
and
my
not
favorite song
one
on the record.
I did not know that near as well as I knew the first track.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful song. It's poignant lyrics. Tangled Up in Blue also, like, great song. And then it just, like, it becomes background music for me completely. So we have this book. I brought it in today. I don't know why, because anything that's in the book I can find online. But Skylar has this.
Shane's wife, for those living,
yes.
listening at home. Or living at home.
Yes, for those living at home. she has
Doesn't everybody
your
live
parents?
At home unless you don't just have one?
Yeah.
the inference was maybe with your parents.
Oh, gotcha.
There's a big book of Bob Dylan lyrics. It's like lyrics 62 to 85. And so, like, a lot of what you hear about Dylan, what makes him a genius, it's definitely not his melodic skills. Let's just establish that.
No.
Sure.
No, I mean, the man is not a genius songwriter. Now, if I could get past the fact that there's not necessarily great songs, and if I were super into poetry, and I should preface this, I don't like poetry. So it's going to be hard for me to get into Bob Dylan.
But here's the thing about... I hear what you're saying there, but here's the thing. Like, the songs, they're not as much allegorical as they are sort of... I mean, there's definitely allegory in some of his stuff for sure, but there's a lot of slice-of-life observation and just stories, which is really interesting. So I went and I, you know, like, the you know, a lot of what you hear about Dylan. I have... By the way, I need to preface this with this also. I have barely more than a passing knowledge of Bob Dylan. I've had a considerable amount of people try to turn me on to Dylan throughout my life, and I think he's just one of those artists that if you didn't get into it in high school.
Oh, I think if you were like 14 or 15 and fell in love with Dylan, that's probably going to be a lifelong thing.
It's going to be a lifelong thing. Yeah, but I think like you really like I can't imagine like it's so far outside of what I like to listen to. And again, I mean the songs are great, just they're not great for me.
Well, and here's the other thing too, Shane. Like one thing that's been that I have found in some of the stuff that I've read that I think is pretty true is that Dylan has made an entire career out of intentionally trying to be enigmatic. And so, you know, this record gets bandied about as his something that's personal and raw, but he made has made an entire career out of writing about in personas. And so they're like, okay, well, this is a breakup record. Okay, well, I get it. I buy that it's a breakup record, but is it your breakup or is it a breakup of a character or a series of characters?
Well, like, he says it's not him, although yeah. His son contests that. His son thinks it's a conversation between his parents.
Oh, I read that too.
I mean, his son couldn't have been. Yeah, right. Yeah, that was on the Wikipedia.
And he had time to talk about it.
All told, his son might, you know, he's a little guy at that time.
He has time to talk about it because apparently they don't tour very often.
Oh, the Wallflowers?
Yeah, hence the name.
Well,
oh, there it is. You're on fire.
Back with the dad humor.
You guys are killing me. I don't, you know, I let you freeze in my garage for what?
And thank you for that.
Yeah. Anyway.
Don't take it to heart when we say the dad humor, Kevin. It's a term of, it's become a term of endearment.
Much endearment. Uh-huh. Yes.
Anyway.
But no, I think, Shane, you had a good point with, like, I don't recognize this as, like, inherently bad music. It's just not music for me.
Right,
and
yeah.
People who are really into Dylan get this kind of faraway look in their eyes, you know, like where there's just this sure. reverence.
They're transported.
And like, I don't know how to process that because I don't get it. Well, and it's an Alex, I think maybe we touched on this last week when we were introducing what we're going to do, but it's the same way that I recognize that the Coen brothers make pretty good movies that I just don't have the time for.
Oh, so I was tempted to say that I was really more of a Llewyn Davis fan. Then is it Llewyn Davis?
I mean, that's the way it's
the Coen Brothers movie yeah. that essentially the premise of that entire film is that Llewyn Davis would have had this character Llewyn Davis would have had Bob Dylan's career were it not for the fact that he lost his shit on stage and berated a fan and got his ass kicked in an alleyway and then Dylan went on next and. Catapulted to fame. That's the whole gist. Spoiler alert for a movie that came out, whatever, a couple of years ago. But anyway, yeah, I found that funny.
That's a funny premise.
Like,
again,
yeah, like
I don't know if that would translate to a funny movie.
It's a funny premise.
It's a Coen Brothers movie. That's the thing with
and I don't want to go off, you know, too far on the Coen Brothers, but like. They seem like they make movies that seem like they would be funny, but they don't make me laugh.
No, it's like when you write it down, like you write out the synopsis on paper, like this is what we're going to write about. That's a funny idea, and then it gets lost in translation.
But you guys aren't Wes Anderson fans either, right?
I run Hot and Cold on.
I'm actually real hot on that. Like, okay. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, see, but at least
I
you're
like
consistent.
About every other movie, and the ones I don't like, I really don't like, kind of for a similar reason, except for the Coen brothers, except that they're a little. Too precious.
Anyway,
I think we were doing.
So you're consistent.
We
so
were talking about Bob Dylan.
We were talking about Bob Dylan. In fact, so why don't we just go ahead and listen to a little bit of "Tangled Up in Blue"?
Okay. Yeah.
Which is probably the one that all of us knew going in.
She was married when we first met, soon to be divorced. I helped her out of a jam, I guess, but I used a little too much force. We drove that car as far as we could, abandoned it out west. Split up on the docks at night, both agreeing it was best. She turned around to look at me as I was walking away. I heard her say over my shoulder, we'll meet again someday on the avenue. Tangled up in blue.
I do... absolutely love that song, and that's like. And Dylan has a number of singles throughout his career that I really do like. "Rainy Day Women," mm-hmm. You know, there's a few sprinkled throughout, but I just don't have this reverence for him that a lot of people like have. You know, put him on this giant pedestal. But that is a terrific song.
It's a masterpiece. I mean, that song is one of the, not just the better songs of his canon. I'm unfamiliar with his canon, so I shouldn't say that. But it's one of the better songs of the last 50 years. I mean, it's got everything you want in there. It's got like all of the Dylan archetype, like the like multiple verses and no real chorus. Like he's got the
but it's
around.
Still catchy. But it'll get stuck in your head.
Right.
No, but that's what I'm saying. It's got all of the hallmarks of the Dylan archetype that we all are familiar with, even if we don't know him that well. But it's like the high point. It's like everything's
him firing on all cylinders. Like when that's Bob Dylan hitting it out of the park.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, and one of the best songs on this record, and arguably not necessarily the best one.
No, I don't think it's the best one.
I don't think so either.
But before we start talking and get further into this record, I just wanted to bring something up real quick, and that is that Ryan and I, during the break, were both admonished by Kevin.
It was a light admonishment.
It was a light admonishment.
I prefer the term corrected.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe even clarification.
Yes, clarified.
Clarification. Yeah, sure. That often on the show here, when we call him out for
quote-unquote dad humor.
Dad humor, that it's not always dad humor because dad humor is...
Here's the clarification. So basically the way that the bucket that I put dad humor in is guy humor that is specifically designed to elicit the groan.
A groan. Okay. Yeah. And so I started to tell the joke and Shane was like, save it for the air.
Yeah. So tell us well, can I say one more thing too? It's not just that though, in my mind, it's that it's like puns.
Okay. So to me, this is the
puns are dad humor.
This actual joke is the pinnacle of dad humor and was told to me, in fact, by father.
Your dad, yes, our dad.
Yeah, who are...
Wait, you're like your dad, you just disown him.
Well, yeah. No, just, but
my dad, who also, it turns out, is Kevin's dad.
But no, he just said it in the way like, he's like, I don't want to admit that this guy's my dad is going to tell this joke.
Our father, who art in Wimberley, Texas, but was in Houston at the time, and I was maybe 8 or 9 when he told me this. And
if you're listening at home or wherever you are, sorry, it's bad. It's super corny.
You know where it's going?
I know where it's going.
Okay, so
I haven't heard it yet.
So there's this guy, Artie, and he's tired of living the regular life and decides he wants to be a hitman. But he doesn't have a whole lot of experience at it, so he decides he's going to do his first one for a pretty cheap rate. And he finds this guy who really wants his wife killed. And he's like, but you don't have a whole lot of...
Just finds her.
Yeah. So... Stay with me here. So anyway, this gentleman was like, well, you know, you don't have a lot of experience. I'm just going to give you $1. And he's like, you know what? That's fine. I'm just trying to get my feet wet. I will kill your wife for $1. So he follows her around for a little while and finally comes up behind her in the supermarket and strangles her to death. Two cops come in, and he strangles them to death too. And he runs out before gets caught, and he goes and he gets his dollar. But later on that night, he does get caught, and the press gets wind of it, and the front page headline in the newspaper the next day says, Artie chokes 3 for $1 at Safeway.
that's bad dad humor.
That is some dad humor right there.
The worst.
The punchline was dad humor, but the body of the joke is
it's a little dark.
Shit. I can't believe
it's a little dark.
Telling it to a 9-year-old.
Yeah. No wonder you're fucked up, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, thanks, pal.
That's the kind of jokes your dad told you when you were 9.
Well, yeah. Sadly, he told all of us. But, yeah. But the deal is like, yeah, so
Okay.
Point the dad is, jokes.
It is groan-worthy.
Yeah, it is groan-worthy. So that kind of stuff is obviously fair game. Anyway, Dylan's dead. Bob Dylan.
He is dead.
I thought you said Dylan was dead, and I was like,
what?
What?
Yeah. What?
There. Oh, so now the counter is 2. Everybody but Shane has done one.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, I'm probably not going to.
Okay,
but
no, it's good.
We'll see if you can.
You're really all about the lyrics.
Yeah. No.
He loves it when we say that.
Oh, but I do want to say something. I'm banging on the Bob Dylan
book. He's got a Bob Dylan book of lyrics. Kevin says, you're really all about the lyrics. It's like, no, I'm not.
Well, no, you have to be about the lyrics in this. Well,
he was physically pounding the book of lyrics.
Look, is this illustrated, this book of lyrics?
I guess so. I never opened it up before today. No, there's a picture
turn
right
to
there.
Verse 7, chapter
Dylan
3.
Drew this shit.
Record 5.
I know, it's a big book. No, the thing about Dylan that Dylan, like I'm just on a
last
frat
name
boy
basis.
Last name basis.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, Newsom? What's up, Dylan?
Apparently, Bartell? Barsmell?
Yeah. The thing about Bob Dylan, for me, is, well, like, you guys like to talk a lot that I'm about lyrics. And it's true that I am, but I like to see lyrics married to good melodies.
Yeah.
And this guy is not long on the melodies.
Not typically, no.
I thought it would be – I knew that we've had this book, and I thought it would be really interesting to just take a look at some of these – I'm not going to read them. I don't even know why I fucking brought this.
But it's great that you did, because what Chain typically does during the other shows, you guys, unless Mark is pulling stuff, Shane is typically, like, searching out lyrics, sometimes while the show's going on, right?
Just
contextually. But here, this is how long Bob Dylan has been around, is that there is a – you know, whatever.
Like 500-page
giant
book.
Yeah, giant
book. And it
book.
Ends in 1985.
Of course, yeah.
So
possibly out of print at this point. Who knows?
Who knows with the verse, you know, people's love of this guy. But so there's one of the songs that I dislike quite a bit on this record. The song that there's a couple that I just have no use for at all.
And are you
one
talking about Idiot Wind?
It was Idiot Wind.
Yeah.
Are we in agreement on that?
We're all...
I dislike it so much I think it's funny.
Well,
yeah. Idiot Wind.
It's
sorry.
The Gomer Pyle of this record.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Today, when I opened the book, when I cracked the book open to read some of these lyrics, the first one on this, because they're organized by album, the first one that I opened it to was Idiot Wind. And I read it, and without the context of the song, the lyrics are – and I was making notes about how I was like, these – I don't even get the why people call him a poet. And then I read this, and I'm like – oh, well, without the musical context.
Oh, it's actually pretty good?
It's really good. Yeah, like really
well, see,
impressive.
See, I have a hard time getting there because the musical context is so absent that, it's basically like, hey, I wrote a bunch of poetry. Let me strum some acoustic guitar and spew it at you.
Yeah, I know. right. I mean, but that's, there's this emphasis on, I think it has something to, like, there was a, and I'm not going to say that in, by any means, is this the definitive observation of what was going on in 1963-64, but a lot of the nascent folk scene, or the at the time nascent folk scene in New York and folk revival.
Ooh, that's what I want to call my next band.
Nascent folk revival?
Yes.
Okay.
That's a
should. Bad, is that going to be
a really bad idea, by the way?
Isn't it a terrible idea?
But it could be like a
well,
California
they could tour
hardcore.
With Funkle Sam.
That's a real band, or was a real band. Yeah. You know what? I haven't even tried.
Have you not told? We've talked about that, haven't we?
Funkle Sam.
And I told you guys my story about Camaro hair, right?
That was
a band I know that played South by. You didn't have them on your show, did you?
I never had them on my show, but. But I did. I met those guys after a set at South by Southwest, and I was like, "And
did
actually,
you go see them because of their name?"
Yeah, I used to go see. I'd go see like one band every South by because of their name. I'll make this really quick. So, I would go see one band every South by because of their name, and I found Camaro hair, and I was like, "Well, that's stupid." So I went.
And, only but, you would see it. That's a stupid band name.
That band is absurd.
But so, it's really evocative. You hear Camaro hair, and you know exactly what that looks like.
Well, oh, yeah. And so I go. They're actually really good live, and they'd come in from Portland or whatever. So they play their set. I go up to them after the show's over, and I was like, "You guys are really good. Do you have a mailing list?" Like. And they all looked at each other like they just never thought of that. And then one guy like starts looking for a pen. And I was like, hmm. And so then I was like, okay, well, you know, I'd like to support you. Like, do you have a CD or anything or like whatever? And he's like, well, we've got this one. It's not very good. we'll just charge you $5. I hate to ask for money for it, but we need gas to get back home or whatever. And I was like, that is the saddest sale job I've ever heard. And they gave me...
It's not very good.
Yeah, so I gave him the $5. They give me the CD, and it's like, it says Camaro hair on it, and it's just got like hair, like the picture of hair on the front, like long hair stretched out across the thing. And it was fucking terrible. It was like, it was goddamn aberrant.
So he wasn't
like,
lying.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah.
I guess I'll sell you this thing just because we need the gas.
I'm sure those guys partied hard on that $5.
Oh, I'm sure.
Probably really.
They bought like one and a half
they
beers.
Probably blew all their money prior to that gig on partying, and then they realized, oh, fuck.
How are we going to get home?
Well, so, yeah, Funkle Sam for another time, but we will talk about Funkle Sam. Just remind me again.
Yeah.
To talk about Funkle Sam, which is the best band name I have ever heard
it's pretty
in
amazing.
My life. Funkle Sam, featuring Jaime Tomas, which as my friend Mike Meadows pointed out, you know his real name is James Thomas, and he probably sings with it barefoot. So anyway, there's stuff in here, in these lyrics. In the next break, Ryan, I want you to take a look at some of this stuff.
I can do that.
But we all agreed that the best song, well, at least Kevin and I did, that I think not only is the best song on the record Simple Twist of Fate, it's one of the better songs that I've heard in a long time.
I was surprised that's
one where he's incorporating melody
right
again, and there's no chorus. He does the refrain thing where, you know, he uses, just like Tangled Up in Blue, like the last line of the thing is, you know, Simple Twist of Fate, or, you know, using that device, which I wish that I were more versed in folk songwriting, or, you know, like,
well, you do go to the Kerrville Folk Festival every year, and have been since, what, you're what, 13 or something?
Yeah, for 16. But I mean, but that's a different thing. Oh, by the way, so I go to this folk festival every year. That's in the Hill Country in Texas. It's 18 days long. In summer, it's hot, and we live in a tent for a month. And I hate folk music, and I've been doing it for 20 some odd years now.
24 years, because you're 40. Also the youngest person in the room.
Anyway,
for a quarter of a century I've been going to this thing, living a month in a tent, essentially, like, in 100 degree weather, and it's all like dust and dirt, and it's quite,
I think I've been for like one night.
It's really fun, and it's a great thing, and I love the people there, and I love a lot of the songwriters.
Well, I mean, it's...
But in general...
Let's be honest. It's fun to sit around a campfire in various states of inebriation and sing songs with your friends.
Yeah, it's great. That's when I say I hate folk music, I don't out there, but I would never could think about putting a folk CD on, like, or CD or whatever.
And
like,
to your earlier point, I think that getting back to Simple Twist of Fate.
Like, no, I wanted to say one thing. Okay. What I meant though was when I say like folk songwriting styles, I didn't mean like folk music how we know it now. I'm talking about folk music as it developed, like how the blues, like 12-bar blues, it's a very regimented style of writing, like 12-bar blues, 8-bar blues.
Well, are you talking like Woody / Arlo Guthrie and Peter, Paul, and Mary?
More like Woody Guthrie. I'm talking about indigenous...
Pete Seeger.
Indigenous folk music to the British Isles and to America. Like, there were, over time, there were forms that developed that I'm unfamiliar with. And so you see this a lot, like this kind of... His writing, it appears to me to adhere to styles that, like, we don't really see.
I feel like Bob Dylan inspired legions, thousands, maybe millions of kind of boring songwriters that, you know, five people watch on a Tuesday night at a open mic or whatever.
How much of that do you think is New York shadow? Like, I feel like there's a little bit of that is being in Greenwich Village at the right time, like.
But there were folk clubs everywhere. That's the thing.
Sure.
Like, it took off.
Yeah, and I'm sure at that time it was the most exciting thing going on. But it's moment passed. But some people just never got over it.
Right.
Well, it developed into a different thing. I mean, like, there definitely are the Dylan emulators. The Dylan. See, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That one was all right.
What did you say?
The Dylan taunts.
The Dylan taunts. That is good.
Well, that was pretty good. We like grudging admiration.
Yeah,
like,
no.
I like it. You both paused and then considered it for a second and then praised it.
No, I'm with you on that. Like, no.
But yeah, so there were, you know, legions of admirers, and but folk music started changing in no small part to what was going on in Austin in the 70s. Where you had like,
well, in Austin it was
country music,
cosmic cowboy movement.
But you also had people like Michael Martin Murphy and Steve Fromholtz and people that you don't know. But
Michael McDonald,
I've heard those names.
That's a different thing too. but guys, or you know what? Actually, Townes Van Zandt. One time I read, and I was thinking he was one
that in the context of Austin is revered about as much as Dylan is nationally.
That's true.
I love his stuff. Like everything about. Towns. I read a quote.
We should do a Towns record down the road.
We have to. Yeah. When I was listening
not
to
next,
this record
though.
Today, no.
Not, yeah.
No, we're gonna
not
be
next.
Far away from this next week. But I remember reading a quote some years ago that Steve Earle,
who named his son
Justin Towns, he said that Towns Van Zandt is the best songwriter in America, and I'll stand on Bob Dylan's coffee table in my cowboy boots and say that.
Thank you for bringing that, but that's awesome.
Yeah. And so at the time, I didn't, again, like, I know Towns Van Zandt more than Dylan, and listening to this Dylan, and you get a lot, you see a lot of comparisons, and Towns Van Zandt does not have the catalog that, I mean, this is Dylan's 15th record.
Well, Towns Van Zandt's been dead for, 20 years or
right.
something?
Right. Close to 20 years.
He lived a lot harder.
But even when he was alive, like, he was, the only time I ever saw Towns Van Zandt live, he was so drunk, and this is in the middle of the day, he had two people, one on each side of him, help him up on stage.
Lovely.
This is how drunk he was. He forgot the lyrics to Pancho and Lefty.
That's pretty much his most famous song.
It's by far his most famous song.
That's the one that made him the most money.
Well, yeah. I mean, Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings coming. But anyway, so I was thinking about this, about Dylan and Towns Van Zandt, and this is before I read his lyrics and read them as much. But Towns used melody more. It definitely influenced by Dylan. But I think that there's a sort of... Like with Dylan, there's almost like I'm just calling him Dylan. We're talking about Simple Twist of Fate, and part of the reason I think that song works so well to me is that, like, I can feel those characters, and sometimes the characters get caught up in a little bit of cleverness, he's always writing these stories and they get a little clever for me. Anyway,
So we've been talking about this song. We should probably listen to some of it.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it. Okay, this is it. This is Simple Twist of Fate.
He woke up. The room was bare. He didn't see her anywhere. He told himself he didn't care. Pushed the window open wide. Felt that emptiness inside. To which he just could not relate. Brought on by a simple twist of fate. He hears the ticking of the clocks and walks along with a parrot that talks. Hunts her down by the waterfront docks where the sailors all come in. Maybe she'll pick him out again. How long must he wait? One more time for his simple twist of fate.
So I had something that I've been wanting to try on this one. Here we go.
Stop.
What the hell is that?
Is it like a tiny harmonica?
It's a tiny plastic.
Well, your mom and dad, or I guess dad, actually bought me a harmonica for Christmas. Meanwhile, I've never asked for one.
Yeah.
I'm not super into harmonica music.
Who is really into harmonica?
Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
It's like the saddest.
But you're saying harmonica music. I'm not saying like music where there's occasionally a harmonica. You're saying harmonica music where it's just dominant instrument.
Well, I mean, Dylan's about as popular as you get where there's a lot of harmonica.
Blues Traveler,
that's true.
That's some bad music there.
Well, and here's the thing.
Can we all just admit that?
Maybe that's the deal. It's one of those things where, like, you hear some Dylan, certainly some Blues Traveler, and you're like, I assume that there's a train nearby. So I just, somewhere, yeah, anyway. So that was my... I wanted to play an inspired yet wheezy note.
It was favorite. Inspired.
That was an inspired,
it was inspired.
One note.
It was one wheezy note. The sad thing is,
we're all thinking the Jeffersons.
No, I was going to say, wait a minute.
It's wheezy with an H, which is...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not anyway, wheezy.
But circling back to Simple Twist of Fate... Like,
excellent song.
Yeah. That's the one that really got me on this record.
I love that. So I could just listen to it over and over. There's somehow, like, he manages to marry, like, the really wordy, not very melodic, but when he drops in the minor chord Just at the right time, it's just so poignant.
That's the exact word I was going to use, is poignant. It just feels poignant in a way that much of this record does not.
When Dylan really works, I think the songs propel you forward, and I feel like this one does that a lot.
Well, and maybe that's what inspires the far-off stare that people get, when he really nails it, he hits somebody in a way that other artists don't. Most of the time, it doesn't do that to me.
I just thought of something. Like, when you said that earlier about the far-off stare, and I was like, get me and Matt Munoz together, talk about the Smiths, we get that far-off stare.
Oh, I'm the same
stare.
Way, yeah.
But the thing is like, I think that people that really inspire passion and they're like, rabid fans, as Matt and myself are, and you with the Smiths, are the Morrissey is incredibly easy to mock and parody, as is Dylan. I think you see that a lot of times where like music that people are really, really passionate
about. And
like,
I can mock Morrissey and still just love
Smiths. But understand what I'm saying. Like, I think when you have people that are making music that are a little bit the misfit, it's easy to fall in love with those, like really fall in love with those artists for some reason.
Well, and it's
nobody really falls in love with Creed.
Well, no.
They might listen to it.
I have met somebody who owned a Creed record.
Yeah,
and
I
let
her
know.
They might listen to that, but
no uncertain terms was that okay. but what I think is maybe similar between, like, say, the Smiths and like a Bob Dylan is they're so idiosyncratic that there's nobody that sounds like them.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. And I think part of that is why it makes it easy to not mock, but you get what I'm saying, right? Like to parody.
Sure.
Yeah, it is so far from the norm, whether it's good or not.
Some of it is the singularity of the experience or the sound. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, completely. We're going to get out of here and go to the intermission a few minutes with in a second. Kevin picked this one this week, but I just real quick wanted to...
So, yeah, while we had a little moment away, Shane had me read the first stanza, because really it's a stanza. He's a poet who sets his lyrics to music.
Yeah, it's not a verse.
Of Idiot Wind, which we were kind of mocking earlier.
It's not a good song.
We were outright mocking it.
And, yeah.
It's not a good song. And like, I had a friend over the other night, and we had just come back from being out, and that was the song I had just heard in the car because I was boning up for doing this podcast. And I came in, and I'm like, Idiot Wind, and I'm like joking around about it, kind of making fun of it. And then I read this, and it's good.
It's
like, on the printed page, it's good, if oddly specific.
That's part of what I think makes it so good. I think it's genius. And I was fortunate enough to have turned right to this page and right to that song because that's the one I like the least on the record. And I read that and I was like, oh, whoa, okay, maybe I've completely misjudged and that's what you have to do first is read the lyrics. And then I went through and read a lot of the other lyrics and I'm like, no. It's about at the level that I thought it was, which is elevated, which is high. But his flashes of brilliance are fucking brilliant.
So we'll just read this one stanza, and then we'll take our intermission. But someone's got it in for me. They're planting stories in the press. Whoever it is, I wish they'd cut it out. But when they will, I can only guess. They say I shot a man named Gray and took his wife to Italy. She inherited $1 million, and when she died, it came to me. I can't help it if I'm lucky.
Like that's fucking
genius. Good.
It's really good.
Now, I may have sounded like Garrison Keillor when I read it, but like, I wasn't doing the sing-songy Dylan thing that he does that obscures,
that's what I was telling.
The story. That's in the way of the story.
Yeah. You have to get outside of the way he punctuates because,
he has like a very specific way that he accents his lyrics and that you just expect it to go in that same fashion throughout the entire song.
It's very sing-songy, and it takes away sometimes from – it obscures – if you're not familiar with the music, it obscures the intent or what the lyrics are.
The content.
Yeah, content, whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
Hey, anymore. Why don't we go to the intermission?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Here's a few minutes with. Okay, so this is a few minutes with, and I don't know. I kind of figured, like, a lot of times in what we'll do for a few minutes with is pick a song with and an interesting video, and I thought since we were kind of doing A legendary record with an interesting backstory. I would pick a Few Minutes With song that also has a really interesting backstory. And the one that I chose this go-around is the song from Dennis Wilson's solo record.
Of the Beach Boys.
Called The River Song. Or River Song, as it were. And, you know, up until the point where Smile actually came out, like, This was considered the most successful solo record, and when it came out, like, it actually was outselling contemporary Beach Boys records.
Well, the Beach Boys were not considered cool for a while. Then they had a resurgence, like, in the '90s.
Right.
Well, no, they had a mid-'80s amazing resurgence for.
Oh well, of course, Kokomo.
Kokomo.
We can't forget Kokomo.
Don't forget there was an episode.
Never forget, Ryan.
Full House.
There was an episode of Full House where John Stamos played congas or drums for him or something. So
And the whole Tanner family got up on stage with the Beach Boys and did Kokomo.
And they looked out and they're like, "No, we can't see cool from here."
Yeah, well, I think I've lost my cool card forever because I just know that.
Yeah,
but the point is like, yeah, back around about 1977, they had cycled out of the '60s. The Beach Boys sound was not what it was anymore, and I thought, and the interesting thing about this record, and rather than having us cover this whole album, because I don't think the album is as strong as this, or as interesting as this one song.
Yeah.
And this song combines sort of a lot of elements of, like, it's dark, but the Beach Boys harmonies are still
there.
Like, the guy can't
full
get
effect.
Away from that. Like,
yeah.
And so, anyway, I was like, yeah, we're in the Wayback Machine already tonight, and, like, we should, like, this would be a fun time to do it. And we watched a little bit of the video, and that provided some additional insight lyrically that I hadn't really considered before.
Is it sort of like an environmentalist song? I feel like...
I think that there's some of that, but some of the footage that popped up in that video, I don't know. Like, yeah, maybe it very well could be an environmentalist song.
I think that I love it. It seemed to
me
he's
like directing a choir in the middle of it.
Yeah, there's a choir. By the way, there is a choir. It's like the Double Rock Baptist Church, and Ryan's like, "There's a what's up with the
why is it all black?
Why is it all black choir?" And, and Kevin's immediate response was, "Pretty sure this is footage from Jonestown."
I'm pretty sure that's not the case.
Well,
yeah.
You guys are right, but like. That's the thing.
I'm
is
damn
like,
right.
Well, the thing is, it's like I've seen that documentary, and some of it looks like that, and it's like it looked like I was like lyrically, like it, there was I was like, okay, well, maybe this is some sort of a protest song, and I've just never interpreted it that way before. But that's not it. Like that's a legitimate choir, and the guy was
That couldn't have been because this came out in what 77, and Jonestown was what 79.
Oh, was that what it was?
Yeah.
So he would also have been a prophet.
But it was like a bunch of black people with a white guy in front of them, sort of directing them. Yeah. although I think this one probably ended a lot better.
Yeah,
certainly that one did.
I hope so. Yeah, you know what this song made me think of, Ryan, was Spiritualized. We did that record.
I was alive for that, but I wasn't here. So, like, what were your And so Mark asked me, I don't know, two or three times, like while I was on hiatus, he was like, "Have you listened to this week's show?" And I was like, "No, like I intentionally haven't. Like I am stepping away, and then I'm going to step back, and I want to."
No, it was a good record and grandiose, and I haven't listened to it since. Yeah. But it was one of those records that people just really have a lot of. Reverence for and I enjoyed it when I listened to it.
Did he say what happened during that?
I think he was purely coming from, and Mark can speak for himself, we'll ask him the next time he's here, but like coming from a place of like I want these to sound as great as when you guys do them.
He was just
asking me if they sounded good, and I was like, honestly, like I just haven't listened to a couple of shows while I'm out because I want to take some time away and then come back and put both feet on the ground.
I was hoping that there was some gossip behind the scenes that I wasn't aware of.
He's like, those fuckers. So He didn't say that.
So they never shut up.
Yeah. Anyway, so should we listen to a clip from?
Let's listen to a clip from it. We'll come back, talk about it a bit more.
If you guys know Spiritualized in the mid '90s, think of that when you listen to this song, because I think they might have been influenced.
Yeah, that's not actually a dot I was connecting, but once you say it, like now I see it. So let's do that.
All right, let's spin it. So, yeah, I mentioned that, I don't know, I feel like there are some darker elements in this song, and I wasn't here for the Spiritualized bit, and I don't know that record.
But it's worth checking out.
I know the reputation of that band, and so I could see, like, some of the sort of orchestral, like,
yeah, and we're talking, of course, about Ladies and Gentlemen, we are floating in space. The song that we're talking about right now is the one that we just listened to, which is
River Song.
River Song.
Right.
Which, as far as I'm concerned, is a fucking terrific song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, great song.
It's great. And I mean, it does sound like, to me, one of the reasons I picked it, aside from the fact that all the dated stuff that I mentioned a few minutes ago, was that, like, it sounds like it's connected tangentially to the Beach Boys canon.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you get those harmonies.
Well, and he was the drummer, and he was the iconoclast rebel of that group, and like, and everybody knows Brian Wilson's story about, like, I guess their dad was an overbearing asshole, and that's part of the reason that those guys were so driven or whatever, but also damaged. And
well, it's the whole Jackson 5 story as well.
Kind of,
like, you know,
yeah.
maybe it's good to have a dickhead dad. I don't know.
I don't know.
It's good, like, for music,
it's
not
good
so
for
good for you.
Your bank account, but yeah. But
it's good for musical history, but not for one's personal
actual
psyche.
People.
Yeah, but anyway, but Dennis Wilson had the reputation of being, you know, kind of the wild guy in that bunch, and drowned, like.
And what do you said, 1983? Yeah. So. But that song takes you on a journey. It starts out, and I'm like, oh, here we go, Elton John.
Right. No, you think it's going to be one thing.
It starts out with that piano intro when you and I were both, like, thinking of different.
Well, and then it's. And then
hold
it
closer. You know, like, we're, like, thinking we're going there, and, like, no, we're not.
Yeah.
Well, it's beautiful.
And then it comes through with, like, then there's that sort of harmony that, or the, you know, the song, like, the lyrical content that sort of floats in under that, and then it sort of, it gets darker and darker and darker, and it ends up with, you know, you got to run away, you got to run away. And I thought that's really interesting that you sort of start with this beautiful place and then you end up.
No, that's a fantastic song. Thank you for sharing it with us. Like, that's like uncle.
Yeah, really.
Which also, I am an uncle to your kids. So
that's dad humor right there. Yeah. Okay. Hey, kinda,
who's groaning now, bitches?
But you. You know what makes that you're using dad humor kind of okay right now? Because these peanut butter cups that you brought in are so
aren't they
delicious.
Good? By the way,
so
Nestle
much.
Is not paying us to talk about this, but
the
Butterfinger peanut butter cups are so good. They're an improvement upon the Reese's. I'll say it.
Well, all I know is that that spoonful of sugar made that medicine go down a little bit easier.
Thank you for that, Julie Andrews.
Well, I interrupt this impromptu scat infomercial that we've got going on here.
I don't want to. I know
what
you're going.
What is that, a long infomercial for shit?
I knew you were going to go there. I knew it.
Yeah. I'm using it in the jazz sense. Anyway.
All right.
But we got to get back to some Dylan.
Yes, so, let's get back to some Dylan.
We're going
to
outro. Uh-oh.
This is going to be the adult part of the show, apparently.
And then we'll talk more. All right. So one thing that I always appreciate about Rolling Stone is that their original reviews of records, like, they don't, and granted, these guys have been around a lot longer than some other publications, but they don't tend to
miss a lot of times.
They miss a ton, but they leave it up there, and they don't go Find Religion and start over like some other publications that we have talked about.
Cough, cough, Pitchfork.
Yeah, et cetera, et cetera. So I wanted to share a little bit of this. One, because it's a peculiar allegory or connection that the original review makes. And second, because I think it's kind of – there is something that this reviewer points to that I think is kind of interesting, and that is – connection between Bob Dylan and Charlie Chaplin.
Who doesn't make that connection all the time?
I know.
And why didn't they throw in Andre the Giant while they were at?
Well,
it?
This and
can't you guys see that?
It was this was written in March of 1975.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Like, yeah. So there was that. Probably they didn't know who Andre the Giant was, but still, it
he
goes
was Andre the medium sized person.
Yeah. This is from the Rolling Stone review written by John Landau in 1975 that says Bob Dylan. Maybe the Charlie Chaplin of rock and roll, both men are regarded as geniuses by their entire audience. Both were proclaimed revolutionaries for their early work and subject to exhaustive attacks when later works were thought to be inferior. Both developed their art without so much as a nodding glance toward their peers. And that's the sentence I think is actually really interesting. Do we think that it's possible, or do we think that it's likely, that Dylan developed his persona? Yeah, you know, and frankly, maybe that's why he's remained enigmatic.
I suspect that he definitely had a nodding glance to his peers in the Greenwich Village stuff, and then his thing just took off. The thing we haven't talked about yet, which I feel like needs to be addressed, this dude like nearly provoked a riot at a folk festival.
Oh yeah, with the band.
Like, how the hell does one do that? Like, all he did was plug in.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad that you brought that up, and I completely like had glossed over that. But I've seen parts of that documentary, and these people are freaking the fuck out. And they're
like, man, get that. Like, getting really fucking mad that somebody plugged in an amp.
Can you hear that? That really pisses me off.
Well, yeah. He's betraying tradition, and that's some conservative ass shit right there. Like,
well, no, but it's like it's leftist conservative.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, they're afraid of it going somewhere.
Well,
new.
And punk, and a lot of like hardcore punks do the same thing. You know, people get into punk. Yeah, like, oh, well, I thought there weren't supposed to be rules, but apparently. Apparently, there are a lot of rules.
A lot of rules.
And apparently at the Newport Folk Festival in, what was it, 67, 66, something like that?
67.
Yeah.
I think.
He plugged in, and like it was like the worst thing that ever happened to most of the people there.
Well, and meanwhile, if you're Dylan, like you're like part of the scuttlebutt on this record is that he was starting to get bored with his own persona. And like...
I would.
Yeah. Sure, well, how could you not? Like... So this is interesting. This is the another connection that this guy makes between Charlie Chaplin and Bob Dylan is that both superimposed their personalities over the techniques of their art forms. Now that's a sweeping generality, like a large
that
statement.
That takes a little while to break down.
It does. So, yeah. It does. And we probably don't have time to like sort of get into the nitty-gritty of it, but I think maybe it begs the question is Dylan a bigger personality or a bigger artist?
Well, that's a good question.
His persona is such a grandiose thing in our culture, which maybe, you know, underscores like why I wanted to pick this record and why it's, you know, this iconic thing and why it's never going to live up to like what its grandiosity is supposed to be, or what it, you know, what its legend is supposed to be
for you. But you're coming at this record like in, you know,
well, I'm coming at it in 2015, and I've sort of heard it, you know, talked about.
Yeah, again, like there's so many imitators and so many parodies at this point. Like, it's hard to hear it with fresh ears.
Well, no, it's Bob Dylan borrowing the tracks TM.
Sure, right, exclamation point.
Yeah, good point.
So, yeah, so this guy goes on, and I'll kind of wrap a bow on this review this way. He's like, so what the conclusion this guy comes to early in this review, and, like, frankly, like, that's exactly what he does, is he concludes in about early, like the second sentence, the second paragraph is, when I criticize Dylan now, it's not for his abilities as a singer or songwriter, which are extraordinary, but for his shortcomings as a record maker. And I think that's actually a pretty valid criticism.
That's a good way to put that.
Like,
yeah, yeah. I mean, that's one of the things I was saying earlier in the record. Like, eventually, like, it starts off really strong, and eventually it just fades into background music. But I'll say, like, one of the things that I thought of, like, record just kept playing and playing and playing, like, several different times in a row, like, while I was doing stuff around my house.
Like, sleeping?
No, like, cleaning my house and shit. Yeah, I wouldn't be, like, yeah, maybe it kept playing while I took a nap or something, but it would have been easy for me to have.
For a lot of this record, I think it would be easy to take a nap.
To take a nap, too. Yeah. I mean, but if it's sort of, it's more interesting. It's not, yeah, right. I mean, that makes sense to me. Like, it begins to just really blend together. Like we were talking about this, and I think the clip that we're going to listen to right now is Shelter from the Storm.
Shelter from the Storm.
In my mind right now, my brain is conflating Tangled Up in Blue and Shelter from the Storm. Same tempo, same strumming.
Shelter from the Storm is Tangled Up in Blue 2.0 and half as good. But it's not a terrible song. And actually, there are tons of artists who, if that had been like the best song they wrote, you'd clap your hands and say it was a crowning achievement.
There's not a terrible song on the record.
None of them are terrible. And I should reiterate that this is not Bon Jovi.
Just wait.
Yeah, man. Oh, don't do this, man. No, there's not a terrible song on this record. I am not the target audience for it, and nor do I think Shane really is. Kevin likes it more than us, but
I'm not fawning by any stretch. Like, there are a few songs that I really connect with, and I, you know, recognize them for the genre that they are, and I think it's interesting. Like,
I think it's easy.
I'm more intrigued than I thought I was going to be.
I think I think for all three of us, I think we're more intellectually involved with this record. Most people seem to be, it's more of a heart record, not a head record, but I think it's completely, I can appreciate it, but it doesn't mean I want to listen to it.
I feel divorced from, like, the sort of mind-body visceral thing that I get from my favorite records. Like, I can recognize this as being something that somebody should love. I'm just not that dude.
Yeah, we just don't have the taste for it. We have different tastes.
So this is another – I'm going to take another – I thought that I was done, but there's another little snippet from this review that I think is kind of interesting, which is that this guy says – and this, bear in mind, this is written in 1975, you know. 10 years after Dylan broke.
Well, people wrote in Old English back then.
Yes, right? Exactly. Yes. It's Sanskrit.
Tis.
So he says, the paradox of Bob Dylan's reputation is that he's regarded as our greatest rock artist without having made the records, the completed works, that should support that reputation.
So that's actually a good point. I'm glad you said that, because one of the things that I kept thinking of as I listened to this record was, like, you know, people have the Beatles versus Stones debate.
Right.
And Bob Dylan is kind of thrown into that mix, not quite necessarily with, like, the Beatles versus Stone, but, like given that sort of
cachet.
Yeah. Thank you. I didn't want to use reverence again. I've said that so many times, and that's not what I mean. But certainly that sort of cultural cachet, and around the same time, and inspired the same kind of adulation. And I can kind of get it when it's Beatles versus Stone. By the way, I'm a Beatles guy. Love the Stones, but I'm definitely fall down on the Beatles on that side. Bob Dylan doesn't even figure into the conversation.
But he's the guy that if he showed up at a private party that either one of them were throwing, they'd let him in and it would be no big deal.
Well, of course.
Deal.
And he is the guy who introduced the Beatles to marijuana.
Sure.
So he's got that going for him, which is nice.
Which probably explains the traveling Wilburys.
Yeah.
Well, so why don't we listen to Shelter from the Storm?
Let's get into Shelter from the Storm, and then we should probably get our shelter from the garage.
Yeah, that's true. So we're gonna listen to this. We'll talk about it for just a second, and then I've got a song for A Current Affair after that.
Was in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue, the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. And if I pass this way again, you can rest assured I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a world of steel eyed death and men who are fighting to be warm, come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm.
So, Shelter from the Storm, like a solid song, and in virtually any other singer-songwriter's canon would be like a crowning achievement. But as Shane wisely pointed out, kind of like Tangled Up in Blue, but just lesser so. And it does do the one thing that kind of like got under my skin about this record, is we're going to do this, then we're going to do that, then we're going to do this again, and we're going to do that. And all you start thinking for is like, oh, this lyric's going to rhyme. This one's going to not.
Yeah.
This one's going to rhyme again, and this one's going to not. And like,
yeah, he does a slight up inflection, and then he does a down inflection when he rhymes it. And that's why I
And you just see the pattern coming like over and over. No, and you read the lyrics and like, okay, solid. But song-wise, eh. Like, I mean, not terrible. Like, you know, like a way better than
Ryan's review of Bob Dylan.
Not terrible. Yes. No, way better than 95% of the music that's ever been put out. But still, there's a lot in that 5% that's way fucking better than this.
Well, I do think.
To my ears, it's so subjective, of
sure.
course.
Sure. And well, I think it's interesting that we're able to take this. That's the thing that's fun about reviewing these in the present day. Like, we can take them out of the snow globe that they are, that everybody, like, where they're transfixed for most people, and then take a fresh look at them, and then take a look at Shane's 30-year-old book and look at the lyrical
content. I think you should just bring this book for every podcast.
Exactly.
We'll just read Bob Dylan lyrics randomly.
Yeah, so we'll just have like, here's how. Now it's time for Dylan's Corner. We'll just read like one stanza.
Just one stanza of a random song that we like randomly point to.
No, I wish that we've talked about this before, but we need to do a solid like 3 week. You know, because each of us pick a record every 3 weeks. We
sure.
need to do, because I'm, one of us is soon going to be picking I Love You, Honey Bear. I mean, we know that. We've talked about it. Mm-hmm. The new Father John Misty. Somebody, we need to do where we pick an album by an artist we've already talked about. And it would be fun to revisit Dylan, because there's so much we haven't talked about.
Well,
we haven't talked about his born again Christian period in the mid 70s.
Dude, that might be a really entertaining podcast.
Yeah, there's a lot of. Oh, he got on a motorcycle. He had a near fatal motorcycle accident in the early 70s that we haven't talked about either. There's so much that we can talk about with crazy ass Bob Dylan.
Make your Easy Rider jokes here.
Yeah. Well, this was fun. This is really fun.
I've had a really great time.
Heart attack. That's actually a lot more serious than I am right now. I'm very serious that we need to revisit. And I'm not talking about Highway 61 Revisited.
Oh, sure.
At some point, we'll revisit Bob Dylan. I don't want to do it in the next couple months, but yeah.
Well, and I do think that, like it's been the great thing about going back and touching base on some of these revered records is that, like, true to the premise of what it is that we're doing here, like, you know, I didn't spend a lot of time rolling around on this.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of people like this. And so, yeah, it was worth talking about, and it'll be fun to take our next step down the path. So, who's got next week's album?
Me.
All right, Shane, are you going to...
No, next week? Next week?
Are you going to be terrible? Or
no, I think you guys are going to like next week. I've got a couple terrible ones, because it's been a little while since we've had...
Since you did shitty records?
Yeah.
That we hate you for?
Yeah. I've really only done one that was that shitty, but that's all right. Last week was Mark.
No, you did Rush 2112, Bon Jovi.
I did too, yeah. Well, Bon Jovi was so egregious.
It's really, 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 really bad.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've got anyway. So next week, I want to do Loopy Fiasco's Tetsuo and Youth.
I have no idea like what any of those words were.
We haven't done any hip hop that's any younger than.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Like
that can't buy a drink for itself.
Yeah, yeah, like, you know, so this album just came out. I really liked Loopy.
Can I see your ID? Dude, I'm a
put out a record in 1988.
So we've done some mid to late. Oh, actually no, all of it were like late 80s. Like I think every record rap record we've done all came out like 87 or 88.
Yes.
But so this is Loopy Fiasco. I really liked his first record a lot. I liked his second record a lot, and then he just went off the fucking tracks, and he's a nutcase. But he just put out a new record. It's getting great reviews, Tetsuo and Youth. And so I want to listen to that.
Let's do it.
Yeah, and he's got a well-deserved reputation for introspective lyrics. So, but also craziness. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen with that. And also, while I'm talking... tonight, I'm the guy that's got the song for A Current Affair.
A Current Affair.
And that we're going to listen to Rock and Roll is Cold by Matthew E. White. So we're going to play a clip for that, and then we'll be back and talk to you guys in a sec.
All right. Because everybody likes to talk. Everybody likes to talk shit. Everybody likes to talk. Everybody likes to talk shit. You said you found a trick to gospel lyrics. You said you found a trick to gospel lyrics. Gospel lyrics, they don't have no tricks. Everybody knows that. Everyone gets. Everybody gets their gospel lyrics and gifts.
Yeah, that was Matthew E. White, Rock and Roll is Cold. I have a lot of mixed emotions about this song. I don't love this song by any stretch of the imagination, but we were listening to it on a smaller thing. You can really get like how the drums are really propulsive and the piano is really propulsive, and that stuff is really fun, but it sounds a lot to me like if you took like Paul Simon's Graceland and Warren Zevon's Werewolves in London,
and added in like Life is a Highway.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. And his essential premise. Well, let me just read you like the song is Rock and Roll is Cold, and he's basically saying like, well, I'll just say, you said you found the soul of rock and roll. Rock and roll, it don't have no soul. Everybody knows that rock and roll is cold. You said you sound the key to R&B. R&B, it don't have no key. Everybody sees that R&B is free. Kind of like in an exact opposite of what with the Dylan. What makes this song somewhat work is the repetitive melody.
And can we talk a little bit about the video? Because we watch. That's usually how we come to these. And essentially, you know, you have a sort of proto hipster walking the desert in no particular direction whatsoever until he comes upon a gas station. And a car with a pretty girl in it, and he gets in, and they drive away.
And they,
like,
what,
that's
what
pretty much the whole video.
But they don't just
drive
away.
That wasn't a jeans commercial I saw in like
kind
the
of,
90s?
It kind of was.
No, that's where you thought Life is a Highway. And then, but then they go to a sumptuous feast, and that's being prepared. At first I was like, oh, is this Thanksgiving Day dinner? But there's no one there. It's not your annoying relatives there. It's just the servant that prepared the feast, and then they walk away, and then they go into the house, they go around the sumptuous feast, and he seats her at the table. Then he seats himself at the head of the table, and the video fades to black. And what I take that to mean, and I'm going to use this is the word of the day apparently, I take that to mean this video to be an allegory that when you're just listening to rock and roll, you're just wandering out in the cold of the woods, but then you get turned on to gospel and R&B, and you're seated at a table with these sumptuous gifts that this music has to give. It's a bullshit premise, the whole song.
And can I say, like, servants are annoying, am I right?
Oh, yeah.
All of my servants. It's so hard to get good help.
You can't get them out of the room fast enough.
It's like, come on, know your places. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, you were ambivalent about this song. I just don't think it's very good.
No, I can. There are parts of it that I like. I mean, again, like the propol. And I wish that we were listening. That we could hear the drums a little bit loud. It's kind of like that. It's one of those songs that it's an earworm. You know, it's also mid '90s or late '90s in a lot of ways. That song could have come out right alongside any Cake song from 1997.
Oh, Cake was so much better than
that. But I'm saying what was being played on the radio during that period of time. Like that song would
sure
have
no
been
no
right
like plenty of shitty songs came out on the radio in the 90s.
But what I mean is that song messes with genres a little bit. Like it sounds like
that.
A 90s song.
I've heard it once.
I'm not
yeah.
I mean, like if you're saying I'm not defending it in any way. I'm just saying like it would have fit in on the radio, like
that was my favorite sitcom, Messing with the 90s.
Messing with the 90s.
It was a VH1 thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, wasn't that a VH1 talking head thing?
It was, yeah. It was a talking head thing.
Yeah, a bunch of mid-tier comedians just show up and talk shit for you know, 30 seconds in a clip.
Mid-tier comedians. That was my other favorite 90s show, mid-tier comedians.
Dave Attell presents mid-tier comedians.
Guys you might have heard of. I think once.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
Byron Allen says.
David Tell's great, by the way.
He's playing here all this week at Cap City Comedy Club.
Of course he is.
We love David Tell.
Yeah. There's a litany of A-list talent that's going to be in Austin. Oh, so by the time that this comes out, it will be close. It'll be close to my South by show. So I got to give a quick shout out to 20 by 2, which will be happening Monday, the 16th of March. And so if you find yourself in town, if you have an interactive badge or any other badge, come on over to Elysium.
Like a cop badge?
Yes.
Like,
yes, you have a cop badge. You have Monopoly money.
Badge of honor.
I think I have a badge
of honor. If you have a weird birthmark you want to show us, like any
come on in.
Come on in. But we do, yeah. So
you're going to get an Elysium again this year, right?
Yeah, we're doing it at Elysium again this year. I won't go through the whole song and dance, but it's going to be a fun set. And so that's Monday, March 16th. This has been fun, you guys.
I had a good time.
Yeah, Ryan, a good pick. I knew we were going to go long on this show tonight because it's one of those things where we all had a lot to say. But it's a really weird thing about Dylan, and I was thinking about this the longer we talked about it. Like, we were all opinionated about this record, but not in like hard way, like not in like hard like this no, is us, I love it. You know,
no,
like,
I don't think it has is not with without merit. It's no, just I'm not the target audience for it.
No. But you misunderstand what I'm saying. Like, I knew we were going to have a lot of opinions about it, but nobody had like an opinion that was all the way to the left of the dial or all the way to the right of the dial.
No, of course
you know, it was
not.
Just a lot of stuff. Like, it was just interesting to talk and listen to and talk about.
There was no strong back of the hand. For the Dylan record.
It's true.
Finally.
It's a sit-in.
Okay, well, we're going to see you guys next week, do some Lupe Fiasco. So for now, we're getting out of here. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
Kevin here. See you next week.